acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a suey nature, a suey nature thing. It's a mighty fine,
mighty fine,
a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 165. Radicchio is so hot right now. Tuesday, April 18th, 2017. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I post show notes, photographs, and links to the things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Today's episode features the following segments: Yarn Lover at Large, Off the Shelf, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and so forth. I'd like to extend a special welcome to Susie123. Susie is from Luxembourg. She introduced herself on the Ravelry board and mentioned that she will be participating in the Summer Tops make-along. It's only the first month of this make-along, but already there is lots of sewing, knitting, there's some crocheting. It's all very exciting leading up to the summer months where we will have some new items to add to our wardrobe. So please take a look at the thread. There are great suggestions for patterns. And join in the fun. We're using hashtag SummertopMakeAlong, or MAL, on Instagram. I think this may have been used by a previous make-along, but it's a good way just to catalog some of our collective making. And a great way for us to meet each other and compliment one another on progress. So I will also link that hashtag in the thread in case you'd like to use it on social media. And I forgot to mention last time that Claire of New Hampshire Knits has generously offered up a $25 gift certificate for the Woolly Thistle as a prize for this make-along. And I'm running a very casual make-along on the thread. You can just post your progress. There won't be a separate finished objects thread, but I will be drawing for some prizes on the first day of summer. And this $25 gift certificate to the Woolly Thistle is pretty cool. Have you checked out some of the new things she has on offer? Very, very tempting. So thank you, Claire and the Woolly Thistle. And I will also be, I think I'll be procuring a couple of prizes during my journey to Washington County, New York for the Farm and Fiber Tour that's coming up in less than 2 weeks now. For my own part, I am almost finished with the knitting of the first of what I hope will be three knit tops for this make-along. I'm knitting the Silken Straw Summer Sweater. It's a design put out by Pearl Soho, and it's available free online. I've made some tweaks to this pattern, but I am using the pattern for the overall shaping and the look of the sweater. And I'm knitting it with some Barocco Ultra Alpaca Fine in a beautiful tawny tiger eye color. This is going to take well under 2 skeins of fingering weight yarn, and I really like the shape. I haven't tried it on yet, but I suspect I will enjoy the fit of this sweater. And it's so plain that I think it will be a good candidate for a wardrobe staple and maybe even something that I could knit in some other colors. It's that classic in its design. So I'm really enjoying that knitting, and I would say I'm about 90% complete at this point. I'm also working on some embroidery for the front of a sewn top. I have some double gauze with kind of like a faux embroidered pattern printed on it. And I'm just using three beautiful colors that I procured at this Steel City Fiber Festival last weekend. I'll talk about that a little bit in an upcoming segment. And I am just embroidering kind of a swath of the fabric in the front over the right shoulder and then down the center and sort of off to the left. It's a lot of fun. It's really a meditative process, and I love looking up videos for different kinds of embroidery stitches and then putting them into this top. It's a lot of fun. And I have the pattern pieces cut out, and I did an overlock stitch along the side. I did some stay stitching along the front neckline so that the fabric wouldn't get too stretched out. And I will be backing this top with a piece of leftover lightweight denim fabric. So my hope is that by the time I am wrapping up my spring break this week, I will be able to sew that top. I'll have the embroidery I want to have on it all finished up. Yarn lover at large. On Sunday of last week, I took a short trip to the Steel City Fiber Festival in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I think I mistakenly said in a previous episode that it was in Bethlehem, but it's in Allentown, and this festival is held at a place called the Merchant Mall. It's sort of a strange hodgepodge of a mixed-use building. But the festival was at least twice as big in terms of vendors than when I attended last year. I'm not certain, however, that there were twice the number of visitors to the festival or how well the vendors did overall. It was a beautiful weekend. There was the floor of the hall, the space that had been secured for this festival, was filled with vendors, and then there was another tent with more vendors outside. It's possible that Saturday could have been better attended than Sunday, I'm not sure. But there really was quite a wide variety of yarn, fiber, and then other kinds of arts vendors. And the layout was a bit odd. Some vendors really seem to get the short end of the stick in terms of accessibility. And the food situation was very, very poor. So I think there could be some improvements, but it certainly seems like there's a great interest in fiber events in the Lehigh Valley area. And lots of vendors were very excited to be there, and I had a lot of great conversation and visiting over the course of the few hours that I was there. I met up with Amy, who is Amos GW, and Laura. Laura knits PA, and we spent, you know, the afternoon together touring the vendors and chatting and having standing in line for a very long time for food. And Amy's daughter, Tsvea, was also there with us. So that was a great visit, and I did a little bit of shopping. One of my purchases was a yard of ice-dyed muslin fabric. I've heard of ice-dyed or snow-dyed yarn, but this was fabric that had been dyed in such a way that it seemed like speckles or kind of a beautiful watercolor. It's a really lovely effect on the fabric. And I thought that this would be some excellent fabric for a summer top or maybe a skirt. I'm not sure if I could get a whole skirt out of 1 yard of fabric, but perhaps it would be possible. And the way I've been making tops, just using interesting fabric for the front and something very plain for the back, I could actually maybe get a few different pieces from this yard of ice-dyed fabric. Another highlight was seeing the gals from Simpatico Fiber, Julianne and Rebecca, and spent quite a bit of time in their booth. And then I also visited Mulberry Hill Farm, where Sean and Colleen had their beautiful booth set up. I was hoping to also see Megan, the dyer behind Distelfink Fiber Company, but unfortunately she has had a very, very, very busy work schedule, and she was not able to attend. But it was pretty exciting to see the braided berry hat and mitts set on display. They had my knit samples on display, and they also had the letterpress. These were all done with Megan's very beautifully hand-dyed yarn. Colleen helped me pick some colors of wonderful embroidery thread for the top that I was just talking about. And then I got to see some of the new yarn that they're working on. Yarn made with fiber from their own flock. Some of this is being sold in beautiful undyed colors, and some of it is being dyed by Megan. So right now they have a worsted and a DK weight available, and there is fingering weight yarn coming in probably a number of months, but nevertheless very exciting for them and for their farm. The family is opening a farm store on their farm in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and they just found out they are going to be vending at Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival coming up at the beginning of May. And this is very exciting for them and their farm. They will be in barn number 6, booth 13. So if you're curious, if you are in the market for farm yarns or expertly dyed, independently dyed yarn, definitely check out Mulberry Hill Farm and Distelfink Fiber Company. And I think that Sean and Colleen and Megan will all be there for the weekend. And if you've been wanting to see any samples of either letterpress or braided berry hat and mitts, they will be on display in their booth. So I'm really, really happy for them and excited to visit with them on Saturday of the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival. So I will do my typical bus ride down, just because it's too long of a drive to really make by myself for just the day. And taking the bus from nearby is very convenient. And I'll get to visit with Emily of Fibertown and other folks who I look forward to running into at the festival. So if you will be there, I look forward to seeing you at Maryland Sheep and Wool. Off the shelf. I'm so pleased with the number of people who have indicated they will be working on memorization of a poem or a portion of a poem during National Poetry Month, this month of April. And I have promised to give some tips for memorization during the podcast episodes this month. In the previous episode, I talked about printing out several different copies of the poem in a very small size so that you could fold it and tuck it into your wallet or put it in a few different places where the poem would be accessible to you. and you could take it out perhaps several times a day. It could also be a good idea to set an alert in your phone or on your computer, just reminding you to take a look at the poem, just so it occurs to you at least once during the course of the day to take a look. This week, I'd like to talk about printing out a large version of the poem and how this could help you with some memorization techniques. Sometimes when I have worked with poetry in the classroom, I've made really large, almost poster size, and I'm not sure of the exact dimensions of this type of paper. It's bigger than 11 by 17, and it is an expense, but it can really be a novel thing and a lot of fun to pass out copies of a poem, and it's kind of giant, and to have students interact with the text. When a poem is that size on a piece of paper, it's almost like the text starts to become an image. And then you can use colored pencils or markers and things to draw on the paper and highlight or emphasize certain things about the poem. So this will work if you print out the poem on 8.5 by 11, or even better, 11 by 17 size paper, and create kind of a worksheet for yourself out of the poem. And then you can do a couple of different things that will aid your memorization. The first thing is to look not just at the lines of a poem, but at the poetic sentences. So many poems will have punctuation, just like regular prose punctuation, even though they're written out in lines. And if you break the poem down into its poetic sentences, it could help you make a little more meaning of the poem, and also it could be easier to commit it to memory. This is particularly useful if your poem doesn't have rhymed lines. Often if there's rhyme in a poem, those sound cues can help you memorize something pretty easily. But a poem that doesn't rhyme can present some challenges. So breaking the piece down into poetic sentences, look for the end marks of punctuation, a period, a question mark, an exclamation point, if you can. If you're looking at a very experimental kind of poem, it may have no punctuation at all. And in that case, you could add some, just so you have some closure in your mind. Where does this idea stop and where does a new idea begin? Another thing that you can do with this large printout of a poem is to circle or underline key words, words that deliver a lot of meaning, words that have images associated with them. So for example, I am working on memorizing Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye, and I have the first stanza committed to memory. But now I'm working on the second stanza, and I know the second stanza has a white poncho in it. This idea of the white poncho, it's an Indian in a white poncho, is really bold in my mind. So that white poncho becomes kind of the center on which the rest of that stanza pivots. And so if I maybe come up with a few other key words and I just have those in my mind, then that will help me recall all of the words of that stanza. So circling key words or phrases, things that have images associated with them, or words you just like the sound of them. Often words with long vowel sounds are good things to circle and commit to memory, because your mind goes to those and they kind of linger. And as you say, either out loud or in your mind, that word with a long vowel sound, it's like a small pause that allows you to recollect what's coming next. I really hope these suggestions help you work on memorizing your poem. There's some great chat on the Ravelry thread for episode 163, where folks are mentioning the poems that they're working on memorizing, and we can exchange tips. You can also ask questions there as well. And someone had asked about good resources to find a poem for memorization. And I suggest the Poetry Foundation page because it has a searchable database. So if you're interested in a particular topic or a particular season, they have a great collection of seasonal poetry. You can check there. And another resource, if you're looking to purchase a book or take a book out from the library, I recommend Billy Collins' anthologies. When he was poet laureate, he had a program. Each poet laureate of the United States is charged with the responsibility of having some kind of program or initiative that forwards the appreciation of poetry by the American people. And when Billy Collins was poet laureate, he did a lot of work with poetry in schools, and he came up with this Poetry 180. Traditionally, there are about 180 school days for public school children, and he had these collections with a poem a day. And these are very accessible. They're by poets you may have heard of and not heard of from all walks of life, and rather classic things as well as very contemporary voices, and things that can generate maybe some interesting conversation in a classroom, but they weren't necessarily meant to be discussion tools. It was like, read the poem and we develop a culture of appreciating poetry. I believe there are at least two editions to this anthology, Poetry 180 and then I think 180 more. And I recommend those to peruse just for the enjoyment of poetry, but I think there are some great selections in there for memorization as well. Ever-expanding skill set. My culinary endeavors during the month of April have been involving a lot of salads. I've been trying to be inventive with my salads. I like them with a lot of ingredients. I like them with little surprises. And so far I've been really invested in coming up with salad ideas. Sometimes when I designate something as the focus of the month for hashtag Power Pantry, it's like an immediate thing that I don't want to make or even consider that thing. It's like I'm already bored with it by the time I come up with the idea. But this month, salads have kept me pretty motivated. In particular, this idea of a roasted radicchio salad. A couple episodes ago, I mentioned this idea of a roasted radicchio and ricotta. I thought it was a salad, but I hadn't read the recipe very carefully, and when I did, it turns out it was more of a spread or a dip. So that wasn't going to do for a meal idea, but then I thought about how to incorporate it with some additional protein and create more of a salad out of it. And I came up with this idea of chicken under a salad. Samuel and I made this meal together. It was an absolute 10. I highly recommend it. And I did give credit to the original recipe, but I wrote up the directions for what we did to make this chicken under a salad. I don't really think it's ideal for a weeknight meal. It was pretty involved and pretty fancy. But nevertheless, we ate it on a Monday night, and it has, I guess the reason it's not so great for a weeknight meal is that it has several components and you really kind of make everything from scratch. So I've included the recipe on this week's show notes for the episode, and I highly encourage you to take a look and give it a try. After making that chicken under roasted radicchio dinner, it felt like I was hearing about radicchio in the news for the rest of the week. The New York Times has an article about it being radicchio's peak season, and an audio podcast I listened to called Spilled Milk also did an episode on radicchio. It just kept popping up in the news. And one thing that seemed consistent is this notion of radicchio's bitter taste, and that perhaps diners are having a renewed interest with bitter flavors. Historically, they're distasteful, and people, especially children, recoil from bitter flavors, and a lot of adults too. But bitter flavors have been associated with something of a refined palate, and they can be quite refreshing and interesting, especially if they're paired with other things that complement them. Something interesting about radicchio is that its flavor changes quite a bit when you roast it. And Samuel and I made this meal together, and when I initially had this chopped radicchio and the dates on a sheet pan waiting to go in the oven, he picked up a piece and ate it and said, oh, he just wasn't very familiar with full-on radicchio. I think he'd only had it maybe in a tossed salad or something, where you only get a piece and a mouthful and there's a lot of other flavors going on. But then once that radicchio was roasted, there was just this really sort of nutty, sweet flavor to those same leaves. So the flavor profile can change a lot depending how it's prepared. I also think that tossing a salad with some kind of vinaigrette or acid, quote unquote, cooks the radicchio a little bit in a salad and can smooth out some of those bitter flavors, even if you're eating it raw. So radicchio in the news. I wish I could tell you that, you know, I have my finger on the pulse of what is interesting in cuisine, and that's why I was really intent on radicchio, but it's really just a coincidence, a happy coincidence, and I encourage you to experiment a little bit with radicchio. And so forth. I'd like to talk a little bit about a recent sewing project. It's the Salt Marsh skirt from the Merchant and Mills workbook. I plan to sew many of the designs in this workbook as part of a summer wardrobe. It's billed as an all-season wardrobe, and I suppose that some of the pieces made with a lightweight wool fabric might be suitable for fall and winter wear. But to me, when I look at these pieces and the way they are modeled in the photographs, it's really more of a spring and summer wardrobe to me. And the Salt Marsh skirt seemed to be the most user-friendly of the designs, and I thought I would start with that. Aside from the enchanting photographs, one of the things that I love about this workbook is the beautifully written descriptions of the garments. So here's what it says about the Salt Marsh. The Salt Marsh pattern makes a simple, long line skirt gently gathered into the waist with a drawstring tie. You can walk barefoot among the cowslips or saunter across the piazza without a care in the world when you are wearing this garment. It is so long and so relaxed that you may forget you're wearing it at all. It has deep side pockets set into side seams that have been brought round slightly to the front of the skirt, making it both practical and extremely comfortable. We have made it maxi length, but it can be cut to the length you choose. This is a very versatile piece that is destined to become a wardrobe staple. It can be teamed up with the bantam vest or the heron wrap top for writing poetry and sketching the trees, or paired with the hair mirror jacket for country show awards. We have made this skirt in a washed linen as well as a lightweight black denim, and it is important to choose fabric that drapes well to keep the soft look of this garment. Isn't that enchanting? I selected 100% European linen for this garment. I ordered it from fabric.com, and I now have a strict policy of measuring all fabric yardage when it arrives, just to make sure that I wasn't shorted on the amount. Because I just tossed this fabric into the laundry bin, and it didn't occur to me that I was short until I started laying out the pattern pieces and realizing, wait a minute, what's wrong here? There is not enough fabric for this skirt. And even accounting for shrinkage in the wash, I was way shorted on this piece of fabric. After several periods of correspondence with fabric.com, they did resend the correct amount, but they don't accept washed pieces of fabric as returns. So before I actually had this matter cleared up, I had figured out a way to get this skirt out of the, it was about a yard and a half that I had, and I had ordered 2.5 yards. So the fabric was a very wide fabric, and what I was able to do was fold both selvages into the center and get the two pieces of the skirt cut. That meant that they were in two different directions, so I had the waistline on one end and then the waistline of the back of the skirt on the other end, and I also had to short the back piece a little bit of its fullness in order to get that whole piece cut out. But this is a very generously cut skirt, so I don't really think that's a problem, although I would like to see, you know, this skirt in its complete fullness. And the other thing was that I had to piece the waistband because I didn't have enough fabric for one continuous length for the waistband. So word to the wise, always measure your fabric. You probably do, because you're much smarter than me. You probably measure the fabric when it arrives to make sure that you've received what you ordered. But now I will make a practice of doing that. So I cut this skirt front and back pieces and waistband from the linen. And then for the pockets, I used a very lightweight silk fabric. And for the waistband, I used a cotton twill tape so that I wasn't sewing an endlessly long tie that I would thread through the waistband. A couple remarks about this skirt. As long as it is, I wish that I had made it a little bit longer. I'm pretty tall. I'm 5'8", and this comes to sort of an odd length just above my ankle. I think it's great with boots, but it's a, I don't know, it might be a little bit of an awkward length for flats and sandals for summer. I love the fullness of it. And I like the way it falls with the back being a little bit wider than the front. So your hands very comfortably go into these pockets with a really gorgeous design. It's a pocket you can really use. And I would encourage you to use a very lightweight or sheer fabric for the pocket, especially if you use a linen, because I think a linen pocket inside of a linen skirt, it starts to make it heavy and really pull down on the front. So I was glad I chose the silk for the pocket linings. There are some darts in the back that are very flattering. And I found the pattern directions very easy to follow. I think the sizing in this workbook is a challenge if you're used to U.S. sizes and measurements. I made the size 12. That corresponds to an 8 in US sizes. And looking at the pattern measurements, that was a perfect fit for me. But I think it's a little big. The challenge with the skirt is there's no side zip or opening. So the waistband has to fit over your hips or you can't get the skirt on. You don't want it too small, but I really didn't want it too big either, because that means all that extra fabric, the difference between your widest measurement and your waist measurement, all that extra fabric is gathered around your waist and you want as little bulk there as possible. So I think I could have gone with a size 10. And part of that could just be the stretch of linen fabric when you're working with it, that maybe I didn't accommodate for that. So that was a little bit of disappointment, that I think it's a little bit big and a little too short. Another thing that I decided to do, I had threaded the twill tape. I have a heavyweight twill tape. I had threaded it through the waistband, and it seemed like the entire weight of the skirt, and it's heavy because it's long and it's a pretty thick linen, the entire weight of the skirt was sitting on the drawstring at the top of this waistband pocket. And I really didn't like how tightly I had to tie the twill tape in order to get that to sit where I wanted it. So I decided to buy some, was it half inch? I think it was 3/4 inch elastic. And I cut the elastic 1 inch shorter than my smallest measurement at my waist. And then I threaded it through the two holes that I made in the waistband. You can put grommets in. That's really cool. But I just used the buttonhole feature on my machine to make two openings. So I threaded that elastic through and I pulled it out the same opening that it went in. I overlapped it by about an inch, and then I just used my sewing machine to stitch a box and stitch down that elastic so it was completely joined, and then I popped it back inside my waistband, and then I threaded the twill tape through, and so it came out either of those two openings. So it looks like it has a tied waist, but really it's a piece of very wide elastic securing it at the waist. And I think that is a much better fit. It feels much better when I'm wearing the skirt. And I would recommend doing that with anything except a very lightweight fabric. If I had it to do over again, I would have hand-stitched the hem of the skirt. I machine-stitched it, and because it's so long, you really can't see it from eye level. But I think with this beautiful fabric, I could have done it better justice if I had done a hand-stitched hem. And maybe I could have saved a little bit on the amount of fabric that I used on the hem so that it would be just a little bit longer. Overall, I like the skirt. I like having it in a very neutral color that really doesn't draw attention to itself, because I think that means I can wear it over and over and over again all summer long. I would like to make another version of this skirt, perhaps in a different color, a little bit longer, maybe try the grommets. And I now have, because fabric.com did make good on the yardage that I ordered and they sent me another piece. So now I have more of this same color fabric and I don't need two skirts the same color. But it has led me to think a little more about the trousers. I think that's the most challenging pattern in the book. It has pockets, a waistband, a zip fly. There's a lot going on in the pattern, and I didn't readily understand all the directions when I read through them. But one thing that was causing me some hesitation with this pattern was the fact that there were pleats in the front. And pleats in the front of pants never makes me feel very good. It always makes me feel like there's excess in the front, and that's not where I want excess fabric. It's not a flattering look. And so I was talking to my mom about this, and she said, oh, well, you can just make them flat front. And I said, well, how do you figure that out when the pattern has a pleat in it? And she said, well, you just cut out the pattern with the excess fabric. You take that pattern piece, the piece of paper, you fold it to create the pleat, and then you just use those measurements, that pattern, to cut out the fabric, and then you have a piece of fabric without any excess. In a million years, I would never come up with that on my own. Thanks, Mom. So now I'm motivated to make these trousers, not with the belt loops, but I just think a pair of linen trousers, that could be really elegant and beautiful. And I have more of this stone-colored fabric. So maybe toward the end of the summer, maybe when I really feel like I've improved my confidence with this book, I will be ready to take it on. The metric measurements are definitely a challenge. I'm not used to working in centimeters. And the other thing is that there aren't clear directions in each pattern for what the seam allowance should be. Rather, it refers you to notches in the pattern pieces to indicate seam allowance. Now, that may be readily intelligible for some people, but it's been really a challenge for me to figure out what is the seam allowance each time, or that the seam allowance pattern to pattern or even seam to seam may not be consistent. I don't know. I am currently thinking about some of the tops in this book for a next sewn garment. Maybe that ice-dyed fabric could be incorporated into one of the tops. And then after that, I want to make the curlew dress. It's a gorgeous dress. The pattern pieces are cut entirely on the bias. And I think that this will present some additional challenges when I use linen fabric and the precautions you need to take not to get that fabric to stretch out at the edges before you get it sewn into the garment. Whatever happens, you know that you will hear all about it here on the Yarns at Yanhu podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Acorns jumping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, furry as a mouse, it's a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves lay down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sweet nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.